Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. Because of social distancing, we're not coming to you from the WIPZ studio, but the show must go on. And there you can hear what happens when emails come in. We get the nice little notice there. So hopefully that doesn't interrupt too much during the show. I hope that you're all staying safe and healthy. That actually leads into what we're talking about today. We're joined by special guest Racine Mayor Corey Mason and Cody Pierce, epidemiologist, bioterrorism preparedness coordinator with the City of Racine Public Health Department. And before we go too far, I do want to mention that we're recording this on Wednesday, April 15th. The program is broadcast on Tuesday, April 21st, and Sunday, April 26th. And with the quickly evolving situation around the COVID pandemic, certainly things can change, but just wanted to let our listeners know when this was recorded. Corey, welcome. I'm going to mess up Corey and Cody, too, somewhere along the line here, that's for sure. But Corey, welcome back. And Cody, I believe this is the first time we've had the pleasure of talking with you on the show, and I thank both of you for making time.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
So COVID-19, you know, has dominated headlines and conversation at Parkside. We've been very focused on how we continue serving our students. So today I wanted to ask each of you about what Racine has been doing to, as they say, flatten the curve and at the same time keep the city moving as best it can in a situation like this. When did the City of Racine first begin to think about the what-if scenarios surrounding COVID-19?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think it was, you know, early to mid-March when we really started looking at some of the trends and seeing some of the stuff from overseas. You know, I mean, my memory of it is like two defining things where it became very real for people. A lot of skepticism, and I recall the NBA canceling the remainder of their season being this defining moment for a lot of people, just anecdotally, who are like, whoa, like that's a big deal. Like that seems more than just a couple people with the flu.
Right.
So that was pretty intense. And then here locally, I think when it really started hitting people is when we canceled the St. Patrick's Day parade. Mm-hmm. That, you know, people had been looking forward to, and just feeling like, you know, with the risk factors we're seeing with community spread potential, it just doesn't make sense to have thousands of people in close proximity for a parade as we're trying to, you know, blunt the spread of the virus. So it was right around then that we started thinking about, like, this might be something that we have to get ready for in a big way. Now, even then, I'll confess to you, like, you know, I did an emergency order that said, you know, we're going to have an emergency declaration and, you know, closure of city services until April 20th. And I remember thinking on March 13th when I did that, and that should be plenty of time to get us through this. And
yeah.
I can tell you just going into next week, you know, we've extended that emergency declaration to March 20th or to May 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be a while longer before we're through all this.
Correct. Cody, what was that beginning like with the public health department?
Sure. So initially, we've been looking at this ever since it kind of manifested in China at the end of 2019 and moving into the new year, and watching as things kind of slowly progressed and across the world and into the U.S. And then eventually into Wisconsin, and we had to start evaluating how it was going to affect our department, how it might affect our operations, if we might have to change how those things work, and just kind of restructure things so that we would be ready to respond if necessary to some sort of situation, which, as everyone knows, it has grown into.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just kind of that situation analysis and figuring out where we were and what we needed to do to be prepared to move into the future with it.
And what were some of the challenges or maybe the things that the city had to do to, you know, maybe try to get everyone on the same page, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I will say there, it's just been a real pleasure to work with other units of government, whether it's been, you know, me communicating with other mayors from around the state about, you know, how elections might go in different jurisdictions or, you know, regionally here, working with the county and their health department along with the county executive and obviously the city with our health department, which also serves Wind Point and Elmwood Park, you know, it's been a real collaboration. And so, you know, it's been really great. And then, you know, not surprisingly, right, UW Parkside was right there. You know, Chancellor Ford reached out right away, as did Brian Albrecht at Gateway, as well as President Swallow at Carthage. So the higher education institutions have also been great collaborators, trying to figure out everything from housing to fabricating masks with 3D printers and everything you can imagine in between. So, you know, what's good about the relationships that we have here locally is that they were strong going into this crisis. And so we're really able to build on those relationships and collaborate effectively as we're going through it.
Mm-hmm. And certainly from a Parkside standpoint, I think that's been an effort that has crossed, throughout campus, whether it be the police department, the College of Natural and Health Sciences, the business school, the arts and humanities. Everyone is certainly taking a look at, you know, how can they help? You know, what makes sense, and some of the personal protective equipment that's been donated by different areas of campus, along with some of the community engagement folks who are working with United Ways in both Racine and Kenosha. So it certainly is an initiative that the entire campus has taken a look at to see how can we help our communities. As the pandemic kind of begins to unfold, can you describe what the planning or the meetings were like for city administrators and also members of the public health department?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think we were all trying to wrap our arms around it. You know, the public health department did a great job, you know, giving me good science on what the status of all this was and their best recommendation based on what we knew at the time to prepare for it. But very quickly, I mean, you know, social distancing, which, you know, is a phrase that we use every day now, was not in my vernacular, you know, 6-8 weeks ago. And so, you know, things like community spread and you know, these terms are like part of our daily life now that we didn't have. And so having good public health staff in place to give reliable scientific information as a policymaker is just really critically important, because it's not a small thing to say, look, we're going to shut down city services, or we're just going to, you know, not allow visitors to, you know, long-term care facilities, or we're going to say that, you know, certain businesses are going to have to be closed for a period of time. Nobody would do that, you know, under normal circumstances. Nobody would want that under normal circumstances. So it's been really important to have good information about why we need to do those things, how long we need to do those things, where we need to do those things, just all those things that come into play. And it all goes back to the science of trying to prevent any more community spread around the pandemic.
Sure. And Cody, in the public health department, how are you gathering, compiling some of that, that information?
So we have staff that are kind of assigned to monitoring different sources of information, whether it's CDC or the State Health Department, the Department of Health Services, monitoring social media for different trends and information that might be posted on there. Mm-hmm. And then regularly meeting with different members of the department, different division directors and myself and some of the other staff, just to kind of make sure everybody's on the same page and has the same information so we can make the best decisions and provide the best information to the mayor and other city department heads, you know, as to what might need to be done now or in the future.
Mm-hmm. And has there been conversation, collaboration with the mayor mentioned the county with other departments around the state or state departments? What's that kind of working relationship been like?
Yeah, I mean, at the mayoral level, I mean, we're often talking to people in the governor's office and to our local legislators about what's going on. I mean, the legislature just passed a bill yesterday that we, you know, we're in conversation with local legislators about. But yeah, I mean, we need to hear from them. I mean, particularly, you know, there's some orders that we did initially here locally, but, you know, because of community spread, I mean, you know, Cody, correct me if I'm wrong, but coronavirus does not care about municipal boundaries. And so in many ways, whatever direction we're going, it's better if it's a statewide declaration coming from the governor instead of a patchwork of of orders and policy decisions, municipality by municipality. So certainly having those conversations and getting clear expectations about what we might expect from, you know, the election that we held just a week ago, if you can believe it. And, you know, the other things that we might do to safely make these contingencies is really important. And so we've been having those conversations on an ongoing basis. And then relying on the state and federal government for good expert advice, Department of Health Services, you know, and the CDC and WHO, all providing really good information out there about what we should expect. And we need that, but it's easier if we're acting in concert as a state than just one jurisdiction at a time.
Mm-hmm. And Corey, maybe a little off the wall question, but your experience as a state representative for this area, did that come into play, or was there benefit to that with now maybe a closer dealing between the city and the state, or not?
No, it's been really good, right? I mean, it's been helpful to know, you know, some of the people who are in the administration are, you know, are friends and colleagues from years of working in the legislature. And, you know, certainly I've been mayor for 2.5 years now. It wasn't that long ago that I was in the legislature. So, you know, there's a lot of people that I serve with that are still there. Those relationships are obviously very helpful, right? I mean, you can get somebody on the phone and just sort of, what's going on here? Explain this to me. Yeah. Or, hey, you know, I want you to understand why cities are saying this and why it's so important that you help us do these things. Those are really important relationships.
We're talking with Racine Mayor Corey Mason and Cody Pierce from the City of Racine Public Health Department. Corey and Cody, we're seeing some, we'll say cautiously encouraging signs with regard to the social distancing helping. And maybe a reduction in the number of new cases. I noticed, I think on, you know, it was a couple of days ago where there was some good news that it was only like 80 new cases in Wisconsin, but then the following day it was 127 or, you know, whatever that difference was, so it didn't continue to drop. A lot of pressure from different areas about reopening of cities, states, things. What are you doing at this point to kind of like start that conversation or think about what has to happen as you begin to reopen some areas of the city?
Yeah, that's a really great question, John. And it's really something that we wrestle with, right? I mean, obviously, we just did a series of small business grants a week and a half ago where we handed out $250,000 worth of grants to small businesses to help them make it through this very difficult time because a lot of them are closed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't want all of our small businesses to be gone at the end of this. That would be devastating as well. Mm-hmm. The hard part is, you know, there are understandably businesses who live month to month on sort of, you know, their sales and their customers that suddenly find themselves without income. So I understand completely the desire to open back up as quickly as possible.
Sure.
But if we're going to open back up, we have to do it safely. And so ironically, if we open up too soon and spike cases back up, the length of the pandemic that we're going to have to work through is going to be even longer. So it's really important that we find ways to stay at home as long as we need to and maintain that safer at home order as long as we need to and not prematurely get people interacting with each other and then seeing another spike and then prolonging this thing even longer than we would like. That is hard for people to hear, no doubt, but we have to let the science drive this and not people's very understandable frustration. It's the best thing. I mean, I have told people who said to me, what can I do to thank those firefighters and public health workers and police that are out there every day? And honestly, what I say is stay home. Because the best thing that you... the best thing that you can do to protect those frontline workers is help us get through this pandemic as quickly as possible and allow the curve to flatten and then actually begin to go down. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we're learning from, you know, Cody and other great public health administrators is, you know, there's no magic day that you're going to be able to dictate when this is going to be done. What you need to do is actually set criteria and benchmarks that we need to make. And once we hit those, then we can start looking at this differently, right? Are we containing the spread or aren't we? Are we at a place where hospitals are overwhelmed or not? Mm-hmm. Are we to a place where, you know, we're seeing substantial reductions in transmission rate, or aren't we? All those things are, you know, there's, you know, WHO or WHO put out a series of things that we want to look at as benchmarks that we need to make before we can safely begin to phase the economy back in. Mm-hmm. It's really more about hitting those benchmarks than it is saying magically on April 24th or magically on May 25th, we'll be through all this.
Right, right. And Cody, what are some of those, can you share with us some of those benchmarks that maybe you're looking at right now?
Yeah, yeah. So going off of what the mayor said, the WHO put out some guidance on the 14th of this month, essentially 6 points that you want to be looking for. So you want to be watching for actually having control of transmission, having healthcare systems and public health systems that are able to adequately test, isolate, treat, and trace every contact. So that means that we need to have better testing capabilities, more testing capabilities, faster testing capabilities. You also want to have the threat to special settings such as hospitals and nursing homes be as minimal as possible. Mm-hmm. We do that through increasing access to PPE and adequate training for those staff. We also want to have preventive steps in place for workplaces, schools, and other essential places so that when they are reopened, they are able to reopen safely, whether that means lower staffing levels at first or, you know, shorter opening hours. We want to make sure that imported or travel-related cases are managed so that cases, you know, if we open our borders or if the U.S. goes back to more of a normal state, we don't have cases being brought back in from elsewhere that right. could kind of start over.
Right.
And then lastly, we want to make sure that the communities around us are educated, engaged, and empowered so that we can adjust to some sort of new norm of everyday life. We may not necessarily go back right away to how things were around here back in February or last summer, whatever it may be, but so that we can kind of cope with that new norm that we have to live with as we still work through these issues.
Mm-hmm. What have some of the conversations been like with, and we talked a little bit about about higher education institutions in the area, but when you speak to K-12, which certainly has such an impact on families where if children are home during the day, where they're not usually home during the day, and how that impacts someone's ability to even if at what time it opens up, that they can get to work. What are those conversations been like?
Well, I can just share with you my own personal experience. I have a 11, 9, and 8-year-old. And so, you know, we're now 5 weeks into them being at home. They're getting a little squirrely, I'm not going to lie. It's been tough. I mean, for a week or two, they're like, hey, this is great. It's like an early vacation. And now they're just like, when is this going to be over? We're just, you know, you know, and we're not, I mean, it's, you know, most families, you know, you got single parent families where this is very difficult, where they've still got to work. And so where do the kids go all day if you don't have school or childcare? But even in, you know, in two parent families, you've got, you know, both parents are probably working, right? And so you got parents that are trying to figure out how to still be productive and basically homeschool their kids at this time and figure out how much they can go out into the world. So it is a big challenge for kids going through this. And it's a lot of uncertainty for them. I mean, there's certainly the academic concern about, like, are they going to fall behind? And, you know, do we have distance learning in place? But it's also, you know, it's scary for kids. Like, when they're hearing about, like, people dying and what's going to happen and, oh my gosh, if you go outside, it could be fatal. And, you know, those are scary things for kids to have to process. So it's, you know, for me, that the social distancing that I've had to maintain in my own house where I, you know, haven't given my wife or kids a hug or a kiss in, you know, almost a month now because we're, you know, trying to stay safe and socially distance. That's really hard. And that story is true for public health workers and healthcare workers. And first responders, they're all trying to figure out, is there being, you know, heroic first responders and first line essential employees in the midst of this virus to keep us all safe? They have families at home that they have to, you know, protect from the virus as well. So it's been a big transition on the way of life for kids and their families, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I try to keep in mind is that, you know, I'm fortunate that I can do what I do remotely, and that's been an interesting shift. But for the people who are out there, the firefighters, police officers, people working in the medical centers, you know, the fact that they're out there and then they come back home, it's got to be a concern or worry about the fact that they're constantly interacting with people, and thank goodness that they're out there doing that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I would say all those workers, but you know, I would also say our sanitation workers that are still picking up your trash. And hey, you know, let's not forget those, you know, probably minimum wage paid employees that are at the grocery store and, you know, the drug stores that are keeping those accessible so that we've got access to food and basic necessities. I mean, they are owed our thanks as well.
Right. Right. I want to shift gears a little bit in that in the past year and a half, there's been a lot of good development news coming out of the city of Racine. How has COVID-19 affected, if it has, some of the projects that you've had the pleasure of announcing in the past 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, we've got one that's just about done at Gold Medal Lofts in Uptown that we're really excited. We've got another one that's underway, the Ajax project, that's actually finished doing the demo, and actually you're starting to see the vertical construction go up. So we're excited about that. We actually think there's one or two more that might break ground this year. The big X factor in all of it is you know, some of the hotel developments. You know, right now, there's not a lot of people traveling. Right. So hotel developments look a little bit different than they did even 2 months ago. So we're hoping that this is a shorter rather than a longer component. But definitely, you know, that hotel space certainly, you know, raises some questions about it. But we're in communication with all three developers that are talking about hotels in Racine, and they're still moving forward. It may take, you know, 6 months longer to complete those projects than we initially thought. But that's probably the biggest concern is the hospitality industry, whether it's hotels or tourism generally or Airbnb or whatever it might be. You know, tourism is going to take a big hit this year, and so we're preparing for that as best we can.
Sure. Well, I kind of hate to admit this, but last weekend I ran out of propane for the grill, and I thought, you know, I'll head over to Court and Dick, called them to see if a plug for Court and Dick Hardware there. See if they were still doing propane. And they said, oh, yeah, they're doing that. And so I went over, and it was weird to walk into the store. And as I walk in the door, there was a person who's kind of standing in the checkout line there. And that person takes a step back from me, and I'm taking a step to the side. And that was a, you know, something that I had never experienced before. But I still had to wait to turn left out of Court and Dick onto Douglas Avenue. So there were still cars there. I thought, I'll just be able to pull out there. I couldn't do that. What do you hear from, Corey, what do you hear from businesses in terms of how are they coping with some of these challenges?
Well, it's a real challenge. There's no doubt. I mean, as I mentioned, that's why we did this small business a forgivable loan program a few weeks ago. We gave out $15,000 awards to about 18 companies to help them get through this. You know, like I said, I mean, particularly for smaller businesses that might have five or fewer employees, like you don't have a lot of cash reserves, right? So, you know, people are worried about making the mortgage or paying the rent or making payroll. Now, I'm hopeful that the Paycheck Protection Act that passed that helps subsidize wages for you know, a certain period of time will help people get through this. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, people are really trying to figure it out, and it creates a lot of anxiety. I mean, you know, I mean, the economy sort of depends on the free flow of goods and services and people. Right. And when that gets shut down, it has a real impact on people. So they're worried. They're worried.
Mm-hmm. And Cody, what at the public health department, what do you guys see on the horizon? What are you looking at?
So we are seeing that things are looking, you know, cautiously optimistic, looking pretty good in the state of Wisconsin. The Department of Health Services put out a release yesterday, the 14th, that the safer at home order in the state does seem to be working. So models from back in March had predicted that as of about the 8th of this month, that we would have had about 22,000 positive cases in the states, and anywhere between maybe 400 and 1,500 deaths. Mm-hmm. And we are well below that number. As of today, we're just over 3,700 cases and 182 deaths. So those are positive signs that things are working. And, you know, we certainly understand that it is tough for people to be staying home and following the order, but people really seem to be doing a good job of it for the most part. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of what we're watching, and just using that information to kind of make predictions and make those decisions for the future as to how long things might need to be extended, if at all, that type of thing.
And it sounds like the at least in Wisconsin, and speaking for Wisconsin, that our healthcare system has so far been able to deal as best it can with the pandemic, we haven't seen the concern about being, you know, above capacity. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah. So, and especially locally too, we're not seeing those overcapacity issues or overflow issues right now. So we're very thankful for that. And it's another good thing that's coming from, you know, flattening the curve, staying safer at home.
Right. Right. Well, I appreciate both of you taking time. We've been talking with Racine Mayor Corey Mason and Cody Pierce, epidemiologist with the Racine Public Health Department. Corey and Cody, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, John. Stay safe. Wash your hands.
I've been washing my hands, and you know, I think I've taken my temperature more in the last 3 weeks than I've ever taken my temperature in my life. But you know, keep doing that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
To hear past editions of Parkside Today, please visit uwp.edu/parksidetoday. Thanks for listening, everyone.